Turn your Bibles, please, to John chapter 4. During the break, apparently some people asked what I actually do. I didn't actually tell you what I do. I have the privilege of being a high school chaplain, employed by Scripture Union in Caboolture High, and I love it. God asked me many years ago to give up my teaching career and to work with my husband in ministry, and 3.5 years ago he gave me back my job in a different way, and now I get to minister to young people and to staff, and it's wonderful and I love it. I don't think there's any other job that you get to wear the God person on your head every day, and you never have to ask, you never have to start a conversation about God, because everybody else starts it for you. And that's just such a privilege. It's wonderful. And then one day a week I care for the chaplains in my shire, so I look after chaplains. And then I also work with my husband. He works for a mission organisation called Youth Ministries. And for 8 years we have been training youth pastors and leaders in youth ministry and how to look after young people. So that's a great blessing too, and I love that. And I don't do as much of that now as I used to, but that's basically what I get to do outside there, and they're all wonderful things. We're going to read John chapter 4 from verse 4. And we're going to read a fair amount, but it's important that that we hear the whole of this story. So if you could bear with me, we're going to read about a woman in the Bible who didn't even have a name. And you all know the story well, I know that. I haven't picked women that you don't know, but they're women that have a lot to teach us. Okay, so Jesus had to go through Samaria, and he came, chapter 4, verse 4, he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, and near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well, and it was about the sixth hour. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and his herds?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. And Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is that you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." And Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and in truth." And the woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us." And Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." Wow. That's actually the first and only time in Scripture that Jesus revealed that he was the Messiah. And he revealed it to a woman with lots of stripes against her. She was a Samaritan, so she wasn't even a Jew. She was a woman, and to boot, she was an immoral woman because she had five husbands. So if you think you've got some strikes against you and you think your world is chaotic, this woman's world was even more chaotic. In fact, some of the commentaries say that she probably went to the well at the middle of the day so that she didn't meet a lot of the other women because she was there on her own and normally the women went together. So she'd gone to do women's work and she met Jesus and he promised her living water. He promised her water that would go on and on and on inside of her and that she wouldn't need to ever drink again. I don't know about you, but does the modern pace of life make you thirsty? Do you find that your heart dries up and you're thirsty and that your heart hardens up and that you've forgotten how to sit at the feet of Jesus and live in that living water? That's what we want to talk about in this next session, being a woman of God. I want to read to you a quote from a book called Breathless. I think it describes a lot of what some of us feel about life. And this is what it says, that the average, it's actually talking about the average American. I always wonder, where are the people out there who'll write some Australian books? So we know about Aussie women and Aussie needs. If there's anybody out there that's got a passion to do that, do it for all us women who want to read about Aussies. But anyway, this is what the average American woman will do. She will spend 6 months, this is in her lifetime, she'll spend 6 months sitting at traffic lights waiting for them to change. She'll spend one whole year searching through desk clutter looking for misplaced objects. She'll spend 8 months opening junk mail, not including the disposal of junk mail, on the fax machine and the email messages every day from television, newspapers, radio, billboards and magazines. She'll spend 2 years trying to call people who aren't in or whose lines are busy. She'll spend 3 years in meetings and be interrupted an average of 73 times every day. Do you ever feel like the interruptions drive you crazy? They do, don't they? They're there all the time. It's like we're not allowed to have any peace and not allowed to have any space in our lives. It's like as if we're not allowed to rest. And that's because the enemy does everything against quietness and rest. The enemy majors on muchness, busyness and noise. That's the world that we live in, muchness, busyness, noise, and a breakdown of all the things that we talked about before and that we hold dear. In the midst of that comes Jesus. And you say to me, oh no, that Jesus was way back there offering living water to the Samaritan woman. If only I could go and sit on the well with my bucket. If only I lived back there when we were talking about before and I could go and sit at the well with my bucket and collect water and meet Jesus, that'd be fine. Then I could rest. I want to tell you a modern day woman at the well story. One of the ladies on my staff is my modern day woman at the well. She heard about Jesus at the back of an RE class. She was a bit like the Samaritan woman. She was from the other side of the track. Never been in a church in her life. Didn't believe that God stuff. Had basically lived in a completely different world. Lived in the world of drugs, alcohol, a fairly immoral girl. I wouldn't like to count the number of husbands she's had. Not as husbands, but as partners. And she's not ashamed of that, that's who she is. That's the world that she lives in. Well, one day she heard about Jesus at the back of an RE class. And something touched her heart. And she thought, maybe this God stuff is true. So she came to me and she said, I've just had a God thing happen to me. And I said, oh, what's a God thing? And she said, well, she said, I was sitting at the back of that RE class and she said, suddenly I thought, what if it's true? So like the Samaritan woman, she'd heard about the Messiah now. She'd heard. But she hadn't met him. Anyway, so I gave her a Bible and I said, well, this is great. Why don't you come and see me and we'll get to know this God. Well, she got that Bible and she immediately called herself a Christian. Much to the horror of the other people in her staff room, because she certainly wasn't acting like a Christian, but she'd suddenly heard about God and she thought this God stuff might be good. And this went on for months, where she'd sort of come down to my room and hear a bit about God and say, yeah, I'm going to pray to God and I'm going to... But I knew nothing had happened in her life. She still hadn't drunk from the well, because she was only kind of... like the Samaritan woman, she was kind of just asking questions about Jesus. She wasn't really interested in drinking any of that water, because that might mean she had to do something about the husband. She wasn't going to do anything like that. So she flitted in and out. Anyway, I kept inviting her to church, One Sunday afternoon, she rang me up and she said, about church, it'd be good. And I said, okay, 6 o'clock. Well, we went to church. Well, now this girl, you have to understand, has never been in church before, doesn't have any idea what church is like, doesn't realise that church has changed, perhaps since she was a child and saw through the window. So she came to church. Well, she met Jesus and she discovered that he was the living water, and she was blown away by the presence of God amongst the people of God. She'd never seen anything like it in life. She'd never tasted anything like it. It was the best water she'd ever tasted. She'd been dry and thirsty. Wasn't any water or any hope out there where she is, nothing. Her life was a mess. And she tasted. And during the service, she got more excited and more excited and more excited, till at the end of the service, she turned to me and she said, I believe in Jesus and I'm free. And it was, I knew she'd met Jesus. She'd met the Spirit of the living God. And not only that, she'd acknowledged who he was. She knew that he was the King of a life. And in that transformation, somehow in that church service, she had accepted Jesus as her Lord and Saviour. Now, we'd talked about it for a long time, but now she was free. And she said things to me like, I used to do pub crawls, but now I do church crawls. She's tried every... She's tried every church in Caboolture. She just keeps going and trying another one because she can't get enough. She absolutely can't get enough because she's met Jesus. And Jesus is as fresh and as living and as alive and as able to meet our needs now as he was for the woman at the well. But the trouble is that sometimes in all our busyness and in all our church activities, and in all the stuff we're doing for God, we've forgotten to receive the living water. And our wells have run dry. And our wells are so dry that we can't sense God anymore. And we don't understand how much we need him. So this lady did the same thing that the other woman at the well did. The other woman at the well ran back to tell the people in the town where she lived. And then she took Jesus back to the town, and Jesus stayed with them a couple of days. And it says further on that many people came to respond to Jesus in that time, because this woman understood that this man Jesus was a prophet. Then she understood he was more than a prophet. Then he told her that he was the Messiah, and she believed, and she took the living water into her heart and then back to her village. My friend went back to her part of the world and immediately started telling her current partner all about this Jesus. Well, he wasn't very impressed at all. She also told him, I don't know where she got this stuff from, because I didn't tell her any of this, but she told him that she wouldn't be able to have sex with him anymore, because now she was a believer. Now, she didn't get that from that first church service. The Spirit of God touched her heart and said, hey, you're living like an immoral woman. Now you're mine, you can't live like that anymore. So So she couldn't live with the partner anymore, because of course he didn't understand that. But that was okay really, because he hadn't been a partner very long, so it wasn't like a long-term relationship. And she told him all about Jesus, everything about Jesus. Well, her mother, who'd been very keen for me to follow up her wayward daughter, wasn't so keen when her wayward daughter found Jesus, because now her wayward daughter was telling her about Jesus, and Mum wasn't quite so pleased, because now her daughter was telling her she needed Jesus too. And suddenly I think she was sorry she'd ever rung the chaplain in the first place. But the exciting thing about this woman is this woman has an awful lot in her life, just like the woman at the well. She has a lot that's not right and a lot that has to be put right. But do you know, I don't have to tell her a thing, she tells me. A couple of days later she rings me and she says, "That's it. I'm not going to do the heroin anymore. It's over. It's finished. I don't need it. I've got Jesus. Isn't it wonderful? Why didn't someone tell me this before?" Like, she can't get enough of this Jesus. So she's given up the drugs. She used to go on drinking binges every weekend, and then she was never quite sure where she'd end up or which partner she was with. She doesn't go on drinking binges anymore. And she's reading her Bible, and she's totally changed. And it's because she met Jesus. And do you remember back to when you first met Jesus? Do you remember how fresh it felt? Do you remember how much you needed him? Do you remember how much he was everything to you? That's what we've got to reclaim from the busy life. Because Jesus hasn't changed. We just got really busy and really hectic. And we forgot that he is the source of all our life. He is the source of everything. Where do you go to satisfy your needs? You know, when you've had a bad day, or things are stressful, I want you to think for a minute. What exactly do you do when stuff's getting on top of you? I know what I sometimes do. I might make a cup of coffee. God's talking to me about that. I'm a bit of an addict. Drink too much. So if I need a lift, I might have a cup of coffee. Some people have chocolate, although that has a bit of a downer effect. Some people ring a girlfriend. Nothing wrong with that. All of us have different escapes for when we're feeling bad. How many of us run into the presence of God? Because really, he is the one who can satisfy every need. If we want to be women of God, we've got to live out of that living water. It's got to pour out of us. It's got to be part of everything we do. It's got to be the air we breathe. It might actually cause us to have to sacrifice some things. There might be a cost to knowing this Jesus. We might have to change some of our lifestyles. But there's nothing better. There's nothing more worthwhile. I think those who led us in worship were talking about it, and I often think of our lives as like a circle with our soul in the centre. And our physical bodies on the outside, and all that stuff that you do in the outside world, like the washing and the ironing and the all that stuff, all that happens, all the telephone calls, all the children's stuff, all the chaos that happens on the outside world. And sometimes our focus is on the edge, the circumference of the circle. So we spend all our day thinking about the panic and the stuff on the outside. Will we get the kid to preschool on time? And will we get the children there on time? And will we be able to do the church job? And will we be able to... And it goes faster and faster and faster. And that's where we live. Well, ladies, I'm here to tell you we can't live out there if we want to survive, if we want to be women of God. We've got to live back in here at the soul. We've got to take care of our souls. That's got to be our priority. And there's no escaping that, because if we just live at the outer edge, what happens is the outer goes faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And if it gets out of balance, it starts to wobble like the wheel of a car. And you know what happens if a car goes off balance? The whole thing crashes. And if we don't check our gauges spiritually, emotionally, physically, if we don't keep a check on ourselves and a check on our soul, we can end up crashing at any time because emotionally things can be too big for us and physically things can be too big for us. What we have to do is manage this big outside stuff, all the stuff you do and all the things that are required of you as women living in the year 2000. Doesn't that have a good ring to it? Women living in the year 2000. We have got to take care of our souls and we have got to know who we're running to. And we have got to have absolute confidence that God is able to take care of everything in our life. We have got to know that God knows us, that He created us, that He loves us, that He put us at this time in history, and that He's certainly able to rescue us from anything that life can bring our way. The woman at the well recognized that. She had all those strikes against her, but she ended up, even though she was a nameless woman, she ended up in Scripture as the person with the longest conversation with Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Now why did that happen? I don't know. Well, God just honoured her. And Jesus knew her need and knew she was searching and spent time with her and explained to her the living water. We've got to find ways in our schedule to tap into the living water. Going to put Kim, can you put this on for me? Thank you, Kim. All my OHPs for some reason are too big, so Kim, you'll just be able to put the bottom part on, not the whole lot. Yeah, right up, take it up a bit further, that's right, a bit further up to that one, that's it, yep. And that comment by Gordon MacDonald from Restoring Your Spiritual Passion says, what we have got to see in the midst of all this religious and irreligious noise of our century is a few simple facts consistent down through history that holy men and women understood. To develop and maintain your spiritual passion, you need to take time, you need to seek relationships, and you need to set priorities. There is no way of escaping it. There is no way that you can live all day, every day in the noise. If you haven't created some quietness and some space in your life, you cannot survive. Because the noise and the phone and the emails and the interruptions wear us down until there's not enough of us left to keep doing the journey. And so we need to find the ways, thanks Kim, we need to find the ways that we can actually be still amidst the pace. Brother Lawrence, who was a monk who epitomised the life of one who was a contemplative soul, said that he was just as at rest in the kitchen with the pots and pans with God in the pace of cooking for a busy monastery as he was actually in church. And we have got to learn to find our places of stillness, fill ourselves up with the living water, and then take the stillness with us. And how do we do that? How do we do that? How do we take the quiet of God out into the marketplace? Let me read some quotes for you. I'm sorry, I had these on OHPs, but you'll just have to listen to me. Nobody can run forever. Sooner or later, our bodies, our families, or our increasing inefficiencies tell us that superwomen do not exist in real life. Eventually, we have to face the question of how we can have useful, productive, fulfilling, God-centered lives in the midst of all the change and chaos of this present age. And Gary Collins in his book Breathless says, if you want to get on top of a breathless lifestyle, find time to know God better and learn to love Him with all your being. Jesus said, if you remember, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. It's not a mistake that Jesus zeroed in on that loving God with all your heart and all your mind. Because if our love isn't right, the rest of our world is going to go off skew. And when the traumas come and the trouble comes, we don't know where to run. And we don't know what to do. And we don't know how to get that energy and power that God offers us into our lives, into our bodies. The secret is, and there have been two sorts of Christians down through history. There have been the active ones and the contemplative ones. And the contemplative ones are like the people who go off and live lives in monasteries. Or I was interested the other day, I think it was from, was it Redcliffe? In the Courier Mail, let me have a look. Some Carmelite nuns were breaking 15 years to go on an outing. 15 years they've been away from the world praising God and serving God. Isn't that amazing? Fancy doing that. I don't know if I could do that. But there are still people today who spend their lives in contemplative activity. And obviously, all of us, particularly those of us who are mums, can't do that. So I'm not talking about running away and locking yourself in a monastery, although it might be nice for a while. But a weekend like this is a good start. It's a chance to get away. It's a chance to sort out the wood from the trees, to get away from your activities and sort out who you are and where you're going and what you need to do to fulfil your key passions in life. If I was to ask you to write down what are the three things you are passionate about, not the 103, what are three things that you are really passionate about? If you wrote those down and you made them the goal of your next few years, you would find that you would achieve more by being passionate about those three things than running after the 103. Because you see, our lives get splintered and disintegrated. I am passionate about being a woman of God. That is my passion. I want to live my life so much out of the Spirit of God that I hear His voice and I obey Him and I do as He asks me to do and I live my life for Him. Now, many days I fail, but I don't give up, because I know that at the centre, deep down in here where the Spirit of God now indwells me, at the centre there is forgiveness and grace and mercy and rest and trust. Because my God is a gracious God. How well do you know your God? How intimate are you with Him? Think about, who do you share your most intimate secrets with? You know how you have a very best friend. Most of us can probably think of a very best friend. Hopefully we've all got a friend that we can share stuff with. That might be a partner. That might be just a friend. That might be a child. That might be a diary or a journal if you're in a lonely part of your life. What do you share with them? You tell them everything, every detail. Well, God wants to be your best friend. And He's waiting there for you to run to Him first, to be the first port of call. Not after everybody else has tried to help you. Not just in the midst of your church activities. You see, we've sort of, I don't know, I think out in life, people who live out in the world, they're measured by their assets and how much money they've accumulated and how far they've got up the tree. But in the Christian world, it's almost like we're measured by how much we do. You know, if you're up the front, or if you're leading Bible study, or if you're leading playgroup, or if you're running at 100 paces and doing, well, you must be a good person. Do you know that God's not going to measure us like that? You know how He's going to measure us? He's going to measure us like the picture at the back. He's going to say, how's your heart, woman? How's your heart? Do you love me? What did He say to Peter after Peter had that terrible thing where he denied the Lord? Gee, don't you hope you won't deny the Lord? But we never know, do we? We never know. But what did Jesus ask him when He got him down on the beach and made him that little breakfast? He said, Peter, do you love me? He wasn't interested. Peter, are you going to serve me? Peter, are you going to do 100 things? Peter, are you going to... You know, his first thing was, Peter, do you love me? And I think that's what He's saying to us women today. Do you want to be women in the year 2000? Do you want to be women of significance? Do you want to be women who make a difference? Then there's just one question. Woman, do you love me? Do you love me with all your heart? Do you love me more than all that stuff out there that you do. And do you love me enough to give me some time and some space and to sit with me in silence sometimes? That's what we've got to do. We've got to bring that contemplative. We're not all going to be out there Carmelite nuns. I don't think I'd last very long. And this isn't a Mary Martha thing either, because I can get guilty over the Mary Martha story. You'll notice I don't do the Mary Martha story, because I can get guilty over the Mary Martha story real quick, because I was raised in the generation of doing things. I was raised to be a good girl, to be busy. And so I do it, it's my nature. I do 100 things a day. I perform, I achieve, and I'm probably the biggest Martha out. But then God called me to be a Mary. Martha was just preparing the meal. But Jesus said Mary had the better part. But I'm a mother and I have to prepare the meal. So Jesus says, love me while you prepare the meal. I had an instance last week. We had school holidays recently. And I've been carrying the burden of this message since Lindy rang me, because I knew what God wanted to say to you, because he just gave it to me. That's why I said I'd do this talk. We had school holidays recently, and my husband was going to be away, and normally I go with him, and I said, no, can't do this trip, need some solid time to get this message out of my head and out of my heart and onto paper. I like things on paper in case I forget where I am. Well, came the school holidays and I turned down lots of things. I mean, I didn't visit friends. I did one day's work in the whole 2 weeks. I cleared my tray so that I could be still with God. But, oh, I forgot I have 4 children. And, man, I've never been so agonized and frustrated in my life, because they were still coming and going and they still needed lifts and they still needed meals and they still needed washing, and my heart was panting to get away. And I did have some good times, but not enough. I wanted kind of, you know, bulk silence, and bulk silence is really hard to find. It's just impossible. And at the end of the holidays I was going, God, I've looked after these kids' needs and I've done the things I've needed, and I haven't done the things I wanted to do. I didn't sew the lounge room and I didn't do this, and I didn't even spring clean my house, which is my first, I love spring cleaning the house. I didn't do any of those things, and yet I still feel as if, you know, with 4 kids it's fractured and there's bits and pieces, and God, you'll have to give me the time. I had part of it down, but not enough. Well, the first Tuesday came, I have Tuesday and Thursday off, and I've dedicated a lot of my Tuesdays and Thursdays to sitting with God, and the first Tuesday came, and there was this huge crisis within my family, not my little family, but the extended family, and it was one of those crises that couldn't wait, like it just couldn't wait, like I couldn't say, go away and sort it out and come back after the 5th of August, because then I'll be able to deal with you. Because compassion told me that they needed help now. So I said to God, God, you know the desire of my heart is to get away with you, but I cannot tell these people who are falling apart on the edge that I can't see them till mid-August. So I gave them my day. And on the Thursday, which was my next day off, I was supposed to have 2 meetings, and the day dawned fair and bright, and the first phone call, the first meeting was cancelled, the second phone call, the second meeting was cancelled, and I think for the first time in about 3 years, all my children were out. No one was coming and going. My husband was at staff meetings. The one at college had to leave early for some unknown reason, and the one at work had gone, and the other 2 were gone, and I had a whole day. Well, do you know, it was like bliss to me. It was just like bliss. And I didn't answer the phone all day, and I just hid away with God, and it was like restoring, renewing my batteries, listening for what he wanted to say and also preparing this. But we need to do that just for ourselves. When did you last turn off the phone and lock the door and hide away? And do you know, when you go to be with God, you don't necessarily have to do anything. You don't have to do a 6-page Bible study with 35 questions. Sometimes you can just sit and be. Did you ever just sit and be with someone you loved, perhaps a mum or a dad or a child? Do you ever just sit and be and just enjoy their presence? Just enjoy the wonder of who they are? Not try and do anything, not try and achieve anything. Just let your battery be restored, renewed, re-forgiven, re-energized, re-ready to go out and face the world. And I believe God gave me back that day. I believe he knows the pressures he's put in your life. I believe that when we spend time at the centre with God, there will be enough for all the compassion we need to give in the outside world, for all the forgiveness we need to give, for all the relationships we need to mend, for all the stuff that happens. There's time if we spend time at the centre. I want you to shut your eyes again. Actually, I had in mind that I wanted to send you off for some quiet. That was my plan. Well, obviously God had other plans because it's raining. And I can hardly send 200 of you off to sit under a damp and muddy tree. So, God, you've got a real sense of humour. So we're just going to sit here and we're just going to be still. And I want you just to listen. I just want you to be still and listen. And we're going to have the first CD.
Prayers from the Desert. Psalm 19, I will.
Wrong one, sorry. Hold that thought, ladies. Number 10, sorry. Sorry, Des, I threw you off by that, didn't I? Number 10. These are, by the way, just prayers read from Psalms. So they're just modern readings of Psalms.
Psalm 91, the shadow of the Almighty. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. Father, today I come and say, I dwell in the shelter of the Most High. I'm resting in your shadow, and I'm trusting you to save me, Lord. I'm trusting you to save me. You said that you will cover me with your feathers, and under your wings I will find refuge. Your faithfulness, Lord, your faithfulness will be like a shield and a rampart to me, so that I will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrows that fly by day, nor pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. Father, I have a confidence from you. I have a holy boldness. Because I put my confidence in you, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of the terrors of the night. I'm not afraid of the deadly missiles that come directed at me. Even over sickness. You said over sickness, we will have authority over sicknesses. Lord, you said 1,000 would fall at our side and 10,000 at our right hand. But it doesn't come near me. God, they fall all around me. But because I'm close to you, it doesn't come near me. I will only observe with my eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. If I make you, the Most High, my dwelling, even the Lord, who is my refuge. So God, no harm, no harm, no harm befalling me. No disaster, I'm asking for that. No disaster coming near my tent. I'm asking you, Lord, give your angels charge concerning me. Give your angels charge to lift me up in their hands so that I will not strike my foot against the stone. Father, I'm asking for angelic help, heavenly winds to come. Help me. Help my family. Lift me up, O God. So I will tread upon the lion and the cobra. I will trample the great lion and the serpent. Father, give me authority to trample on the lion and the cobra. Oh God, because you love me, because you love me. So Father, I call upon you, and you answer me. I call upon you in trouble. Deliver me. Lift me up with long life and satisfy me by showing me your salvation. What a wonderful prayer. What an awesome song.
That's Psalm 91. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shelter of the Almighty. Every day you can dwell in the shelter of the Almighty. You can have a lifestyle that not only achieves all those things that perhaps you feel need to be done out here, but that withdraws every now and then to rest in the shadow of the One who called you and made you. And I want to tell you, to be a woman fully fulfilled and a woman of God, you cannot escape those daily, moment by moment, drinking from the wells. You just have to find the places in your busy lifestyle. How do we do it? Some of you might feel when you hear that tape, well, I've already had the arrows come against my tent, and my tent already looks very battered. Well, let me say that Jesus is also the Good Shepherd. Jesus is the one who walks with us through the valley, even of the shadow of death. And, how do we do that? I can't tell you that story, sorry. Too hard. Okay, how do we do that? How do we bring back the presence of the Almighty into every day? Okay. And say, I lift my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? I also have a garden at the back of my house that I've created with a chair in the middle of it. And I go and I sit and I be. I don't do anything. I just be with God. And I have moments during the day when I can do that. Early mornings, there's always a bit of a sit after school in the garden. The kids know if Mum's in the garden, just let her sit for a little while. Let her sit. She'll probably be better if she sits for a little while with God. Although we do usually manage afternoon tea first, but I sit there, I sit and I just be with God. I sit on his lap and I enjoy him. I love him and he loves me. And I tell him the burdens of my day. And he cares for me. I enjoy him. There are other places, things like you need to turn off some of the noise. That's a bit hard if you've got older teenagers. My sons and I don't necessarily enjoy the same music. But every now and then we switch it off and we have praise and worship flying through the house, and then they have a turn, and then I have a turn, and then they have a turn, and I have a turn. And Jono will say, oh Mum, that music. And I'll say, oh Jono, that music. But I get some time. Worship music is wonderful. That worship this morning, two sessions that we've had to bring us into the presence of God, to remind us of the God we serve, to remind us of His character. Songs that remind us of His character, that He is big enough. Do you believe it in the core of your heart? Do you believe there's blessing for those who follow God? Do you believe you can be a woman like Esther or a woman at the well, and in spite of the chaos of this time in history, and in spite of the mess in our own lives and the wrong decisions we made, do you believe that with God on your side, nothing's impossible? What about for your children? Do you believe? I believe with all my heart that my children are blessed of God. Why do I believe that? Because the Bible tells me that the children of the righteous person is blessed. I'm not a righteous person. I'm not a good person. But through Jesus, I have His living righteousness in me. And therefore the heritage for my children is blessing. And I believe that because that's my God. How big is your God? I remember having a financial consultant come and visit us when our kids, our eldest, had just started high school. We had been in, my husband was a youth pastor for 10 years, so we'd been in a pastorate for 10 years, then we stepped out into mission. And I hadn't worked all those years, so we lived off support. And any of you who live off support know that there are times when it's hard going, and we wanted to cash in an insurance policy that we'd both had as teachers years before. It was only a couple of thousand, but we thought perhaps we should get this Christian to come and give us some advice. And he was a lovely man, but he said to us, "I don't know how you've survived this long, but I'm telling you now, unless you do something about the way you live, you will not survive with four teenagers through teenagehood." Well, when he left, my heart was crushed because I thought, oh no, we must have made a big mistake. We're not going to survive. But I was crushed because I believed the lie. I had to go back to God and say, "God, You called us to serve You and You said You'd provide our every need, and I am going to believe You for the teenage years. I am going to believe You for joy with my children. I am going to believe You for finance to provide for those children." I'll tell you a story about provision. I hope I haven't told you this one before at some other time. I tell this one often because it's a clincher. I'll try not to cry. It's a true story. I went one day to the City Tab to talk to the ladies there about youth ministries and mission with my husband. And I had the four children with me, and because it was a ladies' meeting... No, actually, I don't think Bruce did go. I went. Bruce didn't go. Because it was a ladies' meeting, I sent the kids downtown and said to them to buy something for lunch. And when they came back, they were sort of hovering around, and there were just the most beautiful ladies there, and they were all, you know, saying hello to them. Well, that was kind of like, that was a few years ago. But the next year, so I can't remember which year that was, but the next year, my mum died in the August. I'm going to cry. And we got to the October, and this was my daughter's birthday. And for my daughter's birthday, my mum had always made her a dress, always, every year. Sorry, ladies, can't help it. I'm going to cry. Shouldn't tell this story. Anyway, it got to the week before her birthday and she said to me, "Mum, there's not going to be a dress, is there?" And I said, actually, it must have been a couple of weeks before, because I said, "Darling, we'll make a dress," because I used to sew when I had more time. Well, it wasn't turning out so good. I think I've forgotten how to sew. Never could sew quite as well as my mother. Anyway, the week of her birthday, I didn't have any money to buy her a dress. The week of her birthday, I got an envelope in the mail from a little lady I don't even know. To this day, I've never met her. But she was at that meeting 12 months before. She did not know it was my daughter's birthday. She did not know my mother had died. She did not know my daughter got a dress every birthday. This is what the letter said. "I was going through my underwear drawer. And I found $50. And God reminded me of that little girl of yours. And I wonder if you would take her and buy her a dress." Now you can all cry. That is a true story. But my God knows about my children. He knows about your children. He knows about my finances. He knows about your finances. He knows about my aches and my pains. He knows about yours. And He is able to provide for us in the year 2000 as women if we will bow the knee and honour Him and make Him our first priority. Because remember, Jesus drew aside the disciples and He pointed to a lily in the fields and He said, consider the lilies, consider the lilies. They don't worry and they don't stress, and yet nothing is so beautiful. Why are you worried and stressed about so much? Well, God, I'm worried and stressed because there's so much happening. I was going to read you, and I forgot at the beginning, a banner I saw once that said this: good morning, this is God. I will be handling all your problems today. I do not need your help, so have a good day. Do you believe it? Do you believe you've got a God big enough? Do you believe you've got a God who cares enough? How big is your God? But you might say to me, you don't know. My life's a mess. And some of the things that are broken in my life can never be fixed. I do know some of the things can never be fixed. Some of the things can never be returned. But even our griefs and our sorrows, if we give them to God, He'll carry them for us. He doesn't take away the griefs and the sorrows, but He walks with us through them. We need to learn how to rest and rest in God every day. Recently, I went upstairs 2 Sundays ago. My daughter, all her friends at church were involved in a big worship night. They were up the front singing, putting on a play. Her brother was involved in the play. Lots of stuff was happening. My 15-year-old feels a call on her life to be either a missionary, a pastor, or a worship leader. She just loves God with all her heart. She doesn't mind which of those she has to do, but she wants to do something for God. But because of some circumstances in her life, she wasn't able to be part of this thing, this great event that was happening. Hundreds of young people all coming and everybody up the front doing great things. And I thought about her at 6 o'clock when it was starting, and I thought, I bet she's struggling with this. I might go upstairs and have a chat to her. She was at home. I went upstairs. The door was shut. The light was off. She was lying on the floor with her feet up on the bed. She was playing a CD that had songs on it called The Breath of God. And I thought, she may not have it all together and she may make some mistakes, but she knows where the heart of God is. And that's what we need to know. We need to know how to get to the heart of God. In the midst of brokenness and disappointment and pain, if you don't need how to know how to run to the heart of God, you need to ask Him to help you to find His heart. You need to ask Him to help you find that safe place. And then you need to open your diary and you have to say, where is it going to be? What am I going to give up in my day? Maybe I can't go to all those coffee lunches. Maybe I can't do everything those people at church think I should do. Maybe I can't answer the phone 10 times between 6 and 7. Maybe I need to just sit in a chair, turn on some worship music, and find my strength and my peace in God alone. What are we doing? What are we worshipping? Who are we giving our time to? I got into the car the other day after a hard day at work. I'd rung the kids at 3:10 to say I was coming home. And at 3:15, an irate father exploded in the office. The secretary was in tears. The police had come to take the father away. And the girl who I'd been working with over a long period of extended time and has actually found peace with God, and all the staff keep saying, how come she smiles now and she doesn't cry? Because she's another woman at the well. She found Jesus and she doesn't cry so much anymore because she found hope. Anyway, she was down the office as well, bawling her eyes out because she was so embarrassed about her dad having told the secretary off. And it was one of those moments where I knew I was going to have to stay. And then it turned out the girl was going to have to go home with her mother, who had to come from work, and there was no one else to stay with the girl, so I had to be there till 5 o'clock. And I really needed to go home at 3, and I was a bit stressed because my kids were at home and I don't like doing that to them because I'm committed to being a mother. And so I was kind of there loving this girl and showing her the love of God, but thinking, oh gee, I really got to get home, and I don't think I'd left the meat out, and you know, the problems rise up. And I got into my car. The reason I'm telling you this story is the other safe place I've created is in my car. I have music in my car and only worship music, and I don't turn on the radio. See what it's like in your house or in your car to turn off the news. Maybe you don't need to hear all those terrible things every day. Maybe you don't need all the current affairs with every story about every disastrous thing that happens every day. Maybe what you need is to sit with God.